Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spiders. So to kick this one off, we just want to go back to last week's episode. We're not going to spend a lot of time on it at all because I've said all I really need to say about that. But I just want to thank all the folks that took the time to comment or email about the situation. It's mind-boggling because apparently there are so far close to 70 victims and counting of people who were screwed over by Simply Spiders, which is absolutely atrocious, makes this even more frustrating because, again, it should never have happened. So I do hope, it sounds like there is a lot cooking as far as legally, you know, pursuing legal action, which is great because I find this disgusting. Like, it's a very small hobby. Again, the whole podcast was about how we put our trust in people, whether it be YouTubers that we think are really great people and are giving us their legitimate opinion, whether it be some dealers that we've met and seem to be really nice guys. We want to give people the benefit of the doubt. We will probably continue to give people the benefit of the doubt, but we need to keep our eyes open and recognize that when there is money involved, people will do sleazy things. So I had one kind of negative comment where they're like, I don't understand why you put this out there right now, because what do you hope to accomplish? What is your point? I think they said, which I found odd because my point is, be aware of the fact that just because you see somebody on YouTube that says somebody's a good dude doesn't mean they're a good dude. Just because you met somebody at a show or some type of YouTube meet and greet or whatever, just be aware of how the system works, because I think that's going to be important moving ahead, that we recognize that. And if you use a dealer that everybody is singing their praises about and something goes wrong, something seems shady. And again, we're not talking about there's little issues here and there that pop up with any dealer. We're talking about you start notice something that really doesn't sit well with you. Just put it up there, post about it, do it politely, do it unemotionally, not this person's a total scumbag, just here's what happened, I'm throwing it out there, because what happens is there's always a trail. So that was the point, to kind of get it out there. Apparently some folks went on to post on the video, and anybody that's posting on the actual video on it that is saying anything negative is getting hidden. I was hidden, I tried to comment on it as well, because I really want people to recognize there's a bigger situation here than just, oh, by the way, surprise, this guy was bad. But unfortunately, that's not going to get out on that video. So, oh well. So I'm not going to talk about this one anymore. I had a lot of people thank me for coming forward, you know, in the first time, which was nice. And I will continue to do so, even though it puts me out there. Because bottom line, when it comes down to when somebody's supported by one of these people with a big audience, it can be very, very difficult to come out and try to speak out on them. But I don't care anymore. It's like, if somebody doesn't say something, who's going to? And it really kills me that this many people lost their money. So moving on from that one, we're going to go back to two episodes ago where we talked about the winter stuff and how to get ready for the winter, because I had a couple points that either I failed to make or people brought up that were really good points. One, I don't know if I mentioned it, but I had two people mention the fact that they now have generators, their house hooked up for generators in a case of power outages. I thought in the podcast I had mentioned that, but maybe I didn't. After Billy and I had the situation where we lost power, it was super cold, and we had to run that kerosene heater. We went, enough is enough, we're going to get the house hooked up for a generator. So we purchased a generator, we had the electrician come in, hook it up. It was the best money we've spent in a long, 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 long time. I think I explained before, we used to live on a hill. It was up in basically big hill, wooded hill, and all the trees around the power lines were rotting. Limbs were falling off. So every time there was the slightest breeze, we would lose power. So we did pick up the generator. I spoke to two different folks who are, I believe, in Texas, who went through that whole freeze a couple years ago. And they said that after that, they picked up generators. So that is something to look into. And I know it's an investment. You can get the generators, depending on how large of a generator you want. You can get the generators for $500, $600, which again, seems like an investment, but we spend more than that a lot of times on our spiders. So let's just call it a expense as far as keeping tarantulas is concerned. So just consider that. It will cost you a little bit to have the electrician come in. But I encourage folks that are starting, if you're starting to get a big collection, if you're in a home that you own and you plan on staying for a while, look into having an electrician come in. Do that setup, create that setup so that you can run the generator to power your house. Even if it's a smaller one, just to keep the heat on, it'll allow you to sleep much better at night. Another thing that somebody brought up and I have given thought to, as a matter of fact, I thought of using one of these as far as keeping my slings and juveniles in the wintertime, are those indoor portable greenhouses. You can get them on Amazon. They like have a metal or even plastic framework. You put the plastic over top of it. It creates an enclosed area. It would be very easy to heat one of those. or to have open water sources or have something in there to make sure that even a very small humidifier to make sure that it was a little, the air had a little more moisture than the outside air if you're running heat. I have given thought again to doing that up here. The only thing that's held me back and the only thing I'm worried about is a lot of times the plastics they use for them have that smell to them. And I'm a little concerned about, you know, I'm assuming I could probably set it up in my garage first and let it air out until that smell is gone. That was the only concern I really had, but I am looking into that because I would like to. I have a lot of slings. I have a lot of spiders. I want to make sure they don't dry out as much. The heat has been running. It's gotten much, much colder around here, and it gets very, very dry quickly. So I do run a humidifier for the whole room, but it would be nice to have something to have those slings in to keep it a little bit warmer. So if anybody's attempted that or done that, let me know if you have a recommendation for which of those greenhouses you've used. Most of them you can get for like $50 to $75 on Amazon, and it seems like it'd be a pretty good deal. One of the ones I was looking at was, I think, about 4 feet by 4 feet by about 6 feet tall, and it had built-in shelves. So you could literally walk in, you unzip the front opening, you walk in, and you have shelves on either side of you. Pretty cool deal, pretty neat way to kind of keep slings and make sure they don't dry out during the winter. So those are a couple of the points that folks made. Sorry, I do like to cover comments right after the podcast, but last week's episode was kind of a timely one. I wanted to get it done, and I knew it was probably going to be a longer one, so I held off for this one. The other thing about shipping, I did have a couple dealers reach out and say, hey, we're very comfortable with our winter shipping. We know what we're doing, so that's not an issue, so I don't want people panicking, saying, please hold it. That's a very good point. Make sure you know who you're talking to. If it's somebody that's used to, they assure you they've got their winter shipping down. Sometimes it's easier to ship in the winter when you know that if you put a heat pack in at Michigan and it's going to Connecticut, Connecticut's going to be just as cold. It's actually sometimes trickier to ship when it's, I don't know, 80 degrees in California and still 30 degrees in Connecticut. That's when it can be more difficult. So that was a very good point. So it doesn't mean you have to have everything held. I always put that out there though, in case you're ordering from folks who may not have their winter shipping down or you're not sure, just for peace of mind. But if they guarantee they can ship that out, if it's cold where you are, cold where they are, it's similar temperatures, it's probably safe. So there's something I wanted to just make sure we touch base on, because I don't want everybody holding all of their packages needlessly when their spiders will be perfectly safe being shipped. So that covers it for the last two episodes feedback. This episode, we're going to be taking a look at Thrixopelma. I actually planned on doing this a little while back. I did a video, a feeding video recently, and I showed off three Thrixopelma species in the video. And the odd part about it was only one of those species was originally Thrixopelma when I got it. The two other ones were sold under other names until more recently. Now we think we figured out what species they are. And just to explain this, I have people that freak out every time a name's changed. Like, somebody's just changing the name to make a name for themselves. They're trying to get famous. That's not usually how it works when you have something that's sold in the hobby under the name species. Usually where it says species something afterwards, it's an area where it's found. And sadly, this is another example of the hobby pulling things out of the wild. What happens is somebody finds a species in an area. They don't know which species it is. They sell it into the hobby. It goes under species wherever it was they found the spider. For a while, it's sold under that. And then somebody that knows about spider, a taxonomist or somebody, examines the captive bred stock of this species and goes, hey, wait a minute, this is the previously described. And then it's whatever species was already described. So for example, we're going to be talking of a couple of the Thrixopelma species today. One of them was under Homeoma. One of them was under Theraphosini. And what happened is when somebody actually examined the actual ones that were being sold in the hobby, they realized, no, these aren't a new species. This is one that's already been covered before. This is a pre-existing species. So in that case, the name isn't changed. It's given, it's assigned its correct name. Hopefully that makes sense, because a lot of people freak out about that. It's kind of like Haplopus species Columbia large and Haplopus Formosus. For years, Haplopus species Columbia large, nobody was quite sure. We all thought they were Formosus. Nobody was quite sure. Now we're selling them under the name Formosus because we are assuming that's what they are. So today we're going to start off with the species that I picked up as Homeoma species Blue Peru. Now, this is the one that still confuses the heck out of me. So I'm going to be completely honest with this one. I wouldn't doubt if something changes along the lines. But originally there was Homeoma species Blue, Homeoma species blue Peru, Homeoma species blue Peru 2, and then I think like Homeoma species blue small or something. There was so many different names. It was so confusing. And it was even more confusing because the spiders themselves looked very, very similar and you couldn't really tell them apart too much until they grew up. So in a recent YouTube comment, I wish I tried to find this comment. I have to go back and dig more. But somebody asked me if the ones I had done videos on, which were sold to me as Homeoma species blue Peru, were the ones that we are now considering to be Thrixopelma longicoli. And I said, yes, I think that's what I have. Now I'm not so sure. I believe the ones, when I went back through my records, I believe the ones I purchased were blue Peru. That is thought to be Thrixopelma cayenneolium. So I'm still confused about it, but it sounds like blue Peru, Thrixopelma cayenneolium, blue Peru 2, Thrixopelma longicoli, and then there's still the small version that's out there that is the dwarf species. I will just go with Thrixopelma cayenneolium on this one. That's what we're going to call this one, but again, longicoli, from what I've gathered, quite similar. So I picked three of these up as slings, little teeny tiny slings in the fall of 2017. At that time, I kept them in my favorite sling container, dram vials. I love the dram vials for the slings. I think I talked about how years ago, when I first got in the hobby, I didn't like the dram vials. I didn't get it. I was like, they don't look good. I didn't understand the functionality of them. And then the more slings I raised, the more I ended up putting into the dram vials. I love them now. I have all different sizes. And I find that they just work really well, especially for the smaller slings, for being able to keep track of them, for being able to keep them from drying out too quickly, and for making sure that the slings can find food. So they ate great even early on as little teeny tiny slings. They did a little bit of digging, a little bit of burrowing. It was right down the side of the vial, but I could kind of see them at all times. They weren't one of those ones that were out of sight, out of mind, like some of the slings that you get that will bury themselves and you barely ever see them. And they grew to the point where I had to rehouse them about 8 months later, 9 months later. It was like mid-2018. They had already hit about an inch and quarter, inch and a half or so. So growing, they grew very, very quickly. And at that time, I moved them. I had three of them into 16-ounce containers. Now, 16-ounce deli cup would work perfectly. 20-ounce deli cup would work perfectly. At the time, I had these 16-ounce clear acrylic enclosures, like cylinders that I've been using. I actually have several Afanopelma species in them, and I just rehouse a GBB into them. I tend to not use them for the moisture-dependent species because I think when I ventilate them very, very well. They tend to dry out a little more quickly. But for species that it can get a little bit dry, they're okay with. And so I was using them, but again, the deli cups would work just fine. And again, I put them in there, and I probably could have put them in a larger enclosure right off the bat because I had to rehouse them again in February of 2019. And at this point, I put them into one of the Sistema 3-liter enclosures. I love the Sistema ones. They're a little milky. They kind of have the milky appearance of, say, Sterilite, but I like the sizes. They're stackable, easily ventilated, and I really like using them for juveniles that aren't burrowing fossorial species or arboreal species. So I have probably about 20 of them right now. I'm looking behind me, and there's a lot of them. So again, anything around like a small critter keeper, something around a gallon or so, 2 gallons would probably be fine with them. I did not, with the enclosure, I did the old cork bark hide. I put in about 2 inches of substrate. I kept part of the substrate moist at this point. They didn't seem to care either way, but I wanted to make sure that they had some moist substrate if they needed it. Water dish, leaf litter, moss, the whole nine. They did not dig. And as a matter of fact, as I mentioned earlier, the slings were always very visible. When I put them into the 16-ounce acrylic containers, neither of them did a lot of digging. They were actually rather bold slings, especially for slings. Most of my slings, no matter which species it is, they tend to run and hide. These guys would kind of be right out in the open quite a bit. So I always thought that was kind of cool with them. Was wondering if that would change as they got older, and it really didn't. When I moved them into the Sistema enclosures, they still remained rather visible. I had the cork bark. They could have dug a little bit. They kind of just sat right out in the open, which was great because they're pretty, pretty spiders because obviously they are blue spiders. Everybody loves blue spiders, and these guys really do pack some beautiful blues once it finally starts showing up. And I believe they started showing up blue around the 2 3/4, 3 inch mark is when I started seeing some of the blue. Now, one of them ended up being a male. That one matured out at around 3.5, 4 inches or so, probably around 3.5 inches or so. Brilliant blue coloration. The other two are females. I still have both The male, as far as mature males went, again, was rather laid back. I mean, they all three of them, and one of the things I noticed, I commented in one of the videos, that they were originally called Homoioma species, and it reminded me of H. chilensis a bit, because they would go out on little walkabouts when you'd open the enclosure. They didn't run, they didn't hide in their burrows. When you opened it up, they would come out to explore, which was one of the cutest things ever. And so as young adults, very inquisitive, very curious, would wander around, which I found very, very endearing. So once they hit around the 3 inches or so, I move them into those M Design hinge containers I use. I get them off Amazon. They're about 7.5 by 8 inches by about 12 inches long. And they're both in that now. Both of the females are around, I would say about 4.5, maybe the biggest close to 5 inches or so. And they have remained rather bold and laid back. I never get threat postures. I never get hares kicked. They don't generally run. If I open the enclosure, they might move a couple steps and then just kind of sit there and wait for food. One of my females the other day, I went to feed her, immediately again came out and went exploring, kind of going out of the cage like, hey, what's going on out here? So really, really cute spiders and curious spiders, which they're always, obviously it's not a sign of intellect or not necessarily a sign of intellect, but I always find the ones that don't immediately go running or rushing for their dens to just appear to be more intelligent. Like there's something going on in their little spider brains. They're like, hey, I want to see what's going on out here. So I always found that endearing. But they, again, bold as slings, usually out in the open, bold as juveniles, bold as adults, but not, I haven't had any defensiveness whatsoever. So we have here a spider that grows rather quickly. It seems to be rather readily available. Again, I don't know how different the Longa coli is from the Cyaneolium. I've heard that they're very, very similar. I've also heard that maybe the Cyaneolium grows a little faster. Other people have said the Longa coli grows a little bit faster. They sound very, very similar. So if folks have one that they know they bought as the Blue Peru 2, the one believed to be Thrixopelma Longa coli, please chime in so we can compare notes. But at least the ones I have, the ones that were originally sold as Homoioma species Blue Peru, very laid back, awesome little spiders, and ones I would say would make great beginner species, especially for somebody who is interested in growing a spider up from a sling. Because again, they eat great, grow quickly, good temperament, very visible, and as adults, they are visible and fairly laid back. All the signs of a good beginner species. As far as price, they are a little more expensive than some of your standard beginners, but I've seen them for, you know, $40, $50 for the little slings, which I think is well worth it. And again, if you get a little teeny tiny sling, it's going to grow quickly. They will scavenge feed when baby, so that's important too. So these guys do start off rather tiny, but they'll scavenge feed no problem, and they put on size quickly. So again, I often have folks that ask me, is there a good blue beginner species? Yes, there is. The Thrixopelma cyaneolium or Longa coli, awesome little beginner species. Blue spider females, when they molt, really sport some vibrant blues under light. It dulls out a little bit as they get older, but it's always there. It's not one of those ones that like turns black or brown. They still have those blues even long after a molt, which again, I know how much folks love those blue tarantulas. So definitely a spider I would recommend to beginners, and definitely one that I would like to see on more beginner lists. I'm working on at some point a list of some of the species that I've raised that may be somewhat uncommon, but would make good beginner tarantulas, because I think we have the same spiders on those lists all the time. And it's because they're tried and true. I get it. But it would be nice to add some newer species on there for people that don't mind spending a little bit more money. Because again, we always talk about when people get their first beginner species, they're usually not looking to spend a lot of money. Some of these things can be expensive, some of the rare ones, but I don't think they should be overlooked, because if you're going to go all out, you're going to buy the nice cages, you're going to spend some money on your first tarantula, it's worth it to spend a little extra money on it and get a spider that's going to eat well, grow quickly, and be a calm adult. As far as I'll go through the temperatures and my feeding schedules now, so I don't have to cover it with the other two spiders we're going to be going through today, but my feeding schedules for slings usually twice a week. I try to get the slings out of that delicate sling stage as quickly as possible. I've heard people feed them more. Just know that if you feed them more, they fill up. You might end up with a longer pre-molt period, which tends to freak people out. Mine always ate great. Started them off on pre-killed, but then I had Red Runner roaches. I was feeding them baby Red Runner roaches, and they would grab those up voraciously. Once they hit about 1.25 inches or so, you could feed them larger Red Runner roaches, small crickets. They would eat those fine. Once they hit around 3 inches, I was dropping in large crickets that were taking those down, no problem. You can also use mealworms, superworms, whatever it is you use, they should eat it. The only thing I had a little difficulty with were the B. dubia roaches. That's one I have a hard time with sometimes because I have some things that just don't seem to take to them like the others. I do crush their heads before I put them in there, which helps because it keeps them from digging and they'll just kind of wander around. But I've had them literally like put their legs right on the dubia roach, and the dubia roach just walks away and they leave it. They don't attack it. So just a heads up there, because that's the one thing I do hear is people will tell me they started a B. dubia colony to feed their spiders and they're having a hard time to get their spiders to eat. So I'm sure there's folks out there have no problems with it whatsoever. It's just that's the one feeder I've had a little problem with. As far as temperatures are concerned, in my old house, it was like 70 degrees to 73 degrees or so in the winter time. In the summertime, it was usually high 70s to maybe 80 degrees. Now that we're in the new house, winter time around 73 degrees, it sometimes drops to 60s, high 60s, mid 60s, but only for several hours or so, and then it's back up. And during the summertime, we're talking about usually high 70s to around 80 degrees to even 85 degrees or so. And again, with the moisture requirements, moist as slings, give them a moist spot as juveniles, a little moist substrate to dig into. As adults, they seem to do well dry with a water dish. But what I do is I moisten down a quarter, let it dry out in between. And in the wintertime, I do think keep things a little more moist because the air up here gets so dry. But Thrixopelma cyaneolium, Thrixopelma longicoli, very, very similar species. Definitely encourage folks to try them out, who even just folks who want to try something cool out. It doesn't have to be a beginner species. They're cool spiders regardless, but I do want to raise awareness for them for folks who are out there just looking at their first tarantulas as, you know, to offer them up as a good alternative to some of the more common ones. The next one on the list was sold to me is Theraphosinae species Pura. Love these guys. I had got two slings in early 2018. They were little teeny tiny slings. One of them is since matured male and has unfortunately passed. The female is doing great. Big, beautiful female. Now, as folks have probably guessed, because I said we're talking about three Thrixopelma species, we are no longer referring to this one as Theraphosinae species Pura. We are now calling it Thrixopelma pruriens. This was something that had been mentioned quite a bit. Even as I was doing the videos on what I thought was my Theraphosinae species Pura, there was always somebody chiming in going, that looks a lot like my pruriens. And I had heard that the Pura has a redder bottom than the pruriens. Apparently that was not true because they are thought to be the same exact spider now, which is awesome because the Thrixopelma pruriens, or the Peruvian green velvet, beautiful spider, and it's nice to finally know what I have, because every time you have one of those species, you wonder, what is this going to turn out to be? So supposedly, Theraphosinae species Pura is the Thrixopelma pruriens, which means I have to go back through my YouTube videos at some point and add that into the title so that people know and can find the information on them. But when I got my first ones back in 2018, I put them in dram vials. They did do a little more digging than, and this is something I've noticed even between just the ones I raised back then, the ones I have now. The first two that I got back in 2018 did a little bit of digging. They burrowed a little bit. They stayed out of sight. The three that I picked up a few months or several months ago that are now growing like weeds, they are in the dram vials. I had starter burrows for them when they were super teeny tiny. They did hide in the starter burrows, but once they hit about a half an inch, three quarters of an inch, all three of them are quite visible now. They're always out in the open. They're kind of climbing the side of the enclosure. They don't seem to hide as much. So again, a little more bold, but interesting because the first ones I had, they didn't do that. So different, already seeing some differences in the two batches of them, or the two groups of slings that I've raised up. When housing them, another alternative, the 5-ounce deli cups work very well for the smaller slings, might give you a little more space. I just like the dram vials because I have a lot of them on hand and they tend to not dry out as quickly. Just keep them in mind with the 5-ounce deli cups. You're going to want to keep a little more of an eye on the moisture levels because I found that those, you know, I ventilate them with a little pin around the corner, around the sides, not on the top. And I think because of the way the top fits on the bottom, the lid fits on the actual container, it seems to be there's a lot of airflow in there and they dry out quickly. So just a heads up there. But I did keep them moist as slings. In early 2019, I had to rehouse them. I put them into, again, those 16-ounce acrylic cylinders. You could also use a 16-ounce deli cup or 20-ounce deli cup, something around those size. This was a faster growing species. I was actually shocked, although the new ones I have aren't growing as quickly. So again, some differences there in growth rate. I don't know if it's the temperatures here, although the temperatures tend to be a bit higher here, so I'm not sure why they would have slower growth rate, but the three I have now growing a little more slowly than the first two that I got back in 2018. Now, once they got into those 16-ounce acrylic enclosures, I did the whole, you know, gave them a couple inches of substrate, kept part of it moist, gave them a cork bark hide, some sphagnum moss. They did burrow a bit. They did tend to stay hidden, especially when they went into pre-molt. They would stay out of sight. And then once they hit around 3 inches or so, they were pretty much out in the open, not hiding as much. So at that point, I ended up putting them into, once again, the Systema enclosures. I had them in there for about a year or so. So I think that was probably about 2020 or so, winter of 2020. At that point, they were out in the open, did not use their hides very much. They were a little more skittish than the Blue Perus or the Thrixopelma cyanioleums, but not, they didn't kick hairs. They weren't like running all around. You'd open it up, they'd do their little scuttle and kind of hunker down, and then they just kind of sit there. So I never had any trouble with them. I would not call them particularly a skittish species. They were just a little more excitable than the Thrixopelma cyanioleums. So in December of 2020, I think it was, one of them matured male, beautiful. This is where I got the first big surprise with this species, which really put them up to the top of my list of one of my favorite spiders, is they're green. The male was a beautiful green with some gold highlights, just a really, really pretty spider. I had taken a bunch of pictures of it because I was so excited, because there just aren't a lot of green spiders, and I love green spiders. So the male was green. At that point, the female molted out. She also had green on her, although hers would dull out a little bit in between molts to a little more of a goldish brown with some green highlights. So still kept the green, but not quite as vibrant as the male. In February of 2021, I moved my female into her adult enclosure, which was one of the 8.5 inch by 8.5 inch by 12.5 inch Gary plastic clear boxes. I get them off of Amazon. They make wonderful. My buddy Charles was the one that introduced me to these. They make wonderful enclosures for medium-sized tarantulas, adult medium-sized tarantulas. They offer enough room to put some good substrate, good depth of substrate in there. They offer some room for them to roam around. So for this one, I gave her about 4 inches of substrate, kept the bottom levels moist to start off, cork bark hide, leaf litter, sphagnum moss, water dish, of course, and she settled in really well. She since molted, I think, 3 more times, and she is now pushing around 5 to 5.5 inches, so a good-sized spider, and once again, very laid back and very visible. When I open it up, she usually won't even run around anymore. She just kind of hunkers down and waits. She's a great eater, great hunter, one of those spiders I love dropping in multiple crickets and watching her go hunt them down. She's all, again, very visible. Once she just molted again, still has those green tones. So she's obviously an older girl now. She's what, 4 or 4.5 or so, and still showing off those colors, which is great. So a gorgeous spider. And then like the one I was just talking about, the Thrixopelma cyanioleum, one of those ones that has a good growth rate, is a good eater, seems to be very, very hardy. The three slings I have now are doing great. They eat great, grow at it. Well, my first ones grew a rather quick pace. The new ones I have are growing a little more slowly, but still not terrible, not like in terms of like a Gramostola, Faunapelma, Brachypelma running circles around them. Just not quite as fast growing as the first two I have, but still ones that I would encourage folks that they're looking for to get, you know, a good beginner species that is hardy, fairly fast growing, fairly calm. This would be another species I would tell people to take a look at. Now, obviously, temperament may vary. I did talk to a couple people that said theirs are a little more skittish. We will have to see how the three I've got, the new ones I got, act as they grow older. They do seem to be a little more bold as slings, which I'm enjoying because they're usually right out in the open. And almost like the Homeoma cyanioleums, they are a little more inquisitive, which I think is cool. But I have had folks say there's a little more high strung, so just a heads up with that. But again, if you're looking for a species with some color, a species that is fairly fast growing, eats well, the Thrixopelma purians, definitely one I would encourage people to check out. Now, as far as, again, with the feeding, it was the same thing. I was doing pre-killed early on. They took it no problem. They were taking the small, little tiny red runner roaches no problem. As they got a little bit older, it was to small crickets, little larger red runner roaches. And then once they hit about 2.5, 3 inches or so, it was like medium crickets, large crickets. They were taking those down no problem. Now my female gets 3 or 4 large crickets, you know, once every 2 weeks, every 3 weeks or so, and she's been doing just fine. So again, adding to that list of species that we should pay a little more attention to for those who are just getting into the hobby that don't normally make beginner lists, I would definitely offer this one up. The other thing is they seem to be very easily bred because there's slings, it seems like, available constantly lately, which is awesome because this is one of the ones I originally put on my list of species, of more obscure tarantula species that I would like to see bred more and more established in the hobby. And it seems like they are becoming very established. I've seen slings given away for free. I've seen slings sold for like $25-$30, which is awesome. So again, for somebody just getting into the hobby and they say, I want to start with a sling, or maybe somebody that's got some beginner species but wants to start with their first sling, I would definitely encourage them to check these guys out. As far as moisture, again, I kept the slings moist. I kept the juveniles partially moist, so meaning I kept the lower levels moist, let the top levels dry up. And now as the, you know, the adults, I kept kind of dry with a water dish, and occasionally I would moisten down a corner of the substrate. I do the same thing with the female. Now that it's winter time here, and again, heat's running, air is drying out, I do keep the, I'm a little more careful with making sure that the enclosure doesn't completely dry out because I don't want the air to get too dry in there. But she's done fine under those conditions. The male did fine under those conditions. So not one that I think really needs those moist conditions. You just want to make sure they have access to water dish and moist corner, and they'll do just fine. So Thrixopelma species pura. Now we're calling it Thrixopelma purians. Awesome spider, Peruvian green velvet. I do love that name. It does have the green velvety look to it. They're beautiful spiders. Great showcase spiders. Beginners and established hobbyists alike should not overlook these guys, because I got a funny feeling it's going to be one of those species that becomes so available, people just kind of ignore it for a bit. Don't ignore it. Definitely pick one up. This would be one I would almost like to see down the road be kind of a hobby staple, especially because we don't have a lot of green tarantulas out there. So Thrixopelma prurians, awesome little spider. Next one on the list is one that I've been hearing from a lot of people that have been trying them out, which is great because I couldn't figure out for the longest time. They just didn't seem to be that popular, and I didn't get it because they are awesome, cool, gorgeous little spiders. I'm talking about Thrixopelma ocrati, or the Peruvian flame rump, or Peruvian fire hiney. Now, we use the fire hiney for something else, but awesome little spiders. Now, again, I had kind of a long history with these. I got my first, I think, probably close to 9 years ago, and that was a little half-inch sling. And then a little ways down the road, I picked up another one that was a little larger. I think it was about an inch and a quarter, because I wanted to make sure I got a lady. So the first one I had grew up, molted out a male. It was a mature male at about 3.5 inches, maybe a gangly 4 inches or so, but it was rather small. And at this time, the other one that I picked up, the larger one, was already about 4.5-5 inches. So I was like, okay, this is awesome, because obviously I got one male, the other one's going to be female, much bigger than this one. So the male, I will say, was one of the most skittish spiders I have ever kept in my life, by far. I mean, out of the 140 or 150 different species I've kept, easily one of the most skittish spiders I've ever had. It would bolt around the enclosure if disturbed. It would kick up hairs at the slightest disturbance. It was a whack job. Now, the other one, a little more calm, but again, I found that all of them will kick hairs if disturbed. But the other one went on to molt 2 more times and then molted to this big, beautiful 7-inch male. And I was shocked because it was so much bigger than the other one. They were kept the same way. I don't get what the difference was, but one of them was probably 3.75 to 4 inches. This one was easily a long, leggy, gangly 7 inches. And once again, crazy skittish, but a beautiful animal nonetheless. So I picked up another one, a half inch sling, in mid-2018 in my quest to get a lady. And once it hit about 1.75 inches or so, I moved it to one of those AMAC boxes that's around, I'm going to say ballpark, 4x4x5 inches or so. And this is one of the species that for a while people were keeping terrestrially. They are considered to be arboreal. I don't even think we use the term semi-arboreal with them anymore. We set them up arboreally, and it cracks me up because I have people that sometimes look at a particular spider and they go, that's not an arboreal spider. Look at the build of it. And this one goes to show you that they don't necessarily have to have that arboreal build to be arboreal spiders. So this is one that looks more, when you see it out, it does have more of a terrestrial look to it, but they apparently in the wild, the thing I heard is that they will climb up vines, they'll hang on wild strawberry vines. And if you look at the appearance of this spider, spider. The overall base color is this weird bluish green coloration, and then their butts are like a bright pinkish red. And when they first get disturbed, sometimes if they're on the side of like a cork bark or something, they will stick their butt straight up in the air. I have heard this is because in the wild, when they are on those wild strawberry plants, they will stick their butts in the air because it almost blends in with the wild strawberry. You figure the vine's green, the strawberries are pinkish, and these guys are green, their butts are pinkish, so it blends right in. I don't know how much truth there is to that, but it does. It sounds like something that could be the case. But really beautiful spiders. There's not much like them. I mean, that green and pink combination when you see it under light is just extraordinary. So I moved Juvenile in the AMAC box. I kept it in there much longer than I should have. I remember we were getting ready to do a rehousing for it. And at that time, it went into pre-mold, and I didn't want to move it when I was in pre-mold. Then we ended up moving to a different house, so I didn't want to move it until after we got the new house. So finally, we ended up moving it when it hit about 3.5 inches, 4 inches or so, and we moved it into one of the ExoTerra Nanos Talls. Those are the ones that are about 8 inches by 8 inches by 12 inches, very popular for arboreal species. I set it up with about 3.5 to 4 inches of substrate, piece of cork bark with some fake foliage on it, leaned in a corner, some moss, and more often than not, when I open up the enclosure, I find it sitting right on that piece of cork bark. It hunts right from that cork bark. So again, exercising its arboreal tendencies. As far as moisture is concerned, again, like the other previously mentioned species, I kept the slings moist, kept the juveniles moist. I let it dry out just a hair as an adult, but it's always got a full water dish, and then I moisten it down. So I basically soak the substrate, let it dry out, soak the substrate again. And by soak the substrate, I mean the bottom layers. I try to pour the water down so it goes in between the actual enclosure and the substrate, keeps those bottom layers moist, let the top dry out a little bit. She's got the little moss patch. I do keep that moist. And then now again that it's wintertime, just like with the other ones, I'm a little more careful. Summertime is usually, and to make this clear with all three species we're talking about here, summertime here, it tends to get quite humid. So I'm not as careful in keeping things moist because I let things dry out a little bit, because if it's humid in the room and it's really humid inside those enclosures, it can be overkill. So that's usually where I let things dry out a little bit. The wintertime is where I'm a little more diligent, a little more careful in making sure that things don't completely dry out, because again, we don't want that dry air getting into the enclosure and creating a dry, toxic environment for the spider, especially, you know, when it's around pre-molt time. So the one I have now is probably around 4, 4.5 inches. I have not sexed it yet. I have not gotten a good molt from it. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that I finally get a lady, because this was a specimen that I identified many, many years ago, 9 years ago, that I really wanted in my collection. I couldn't figure it out because when I first saw them, I'm like, whoa, what is this thing? And then the prices weren't all that expensive. They aren't particularly expensive spiders, especially as slings usually. And they're gorgeous as adults. So I could not figure out why more people weren't talking about these or jumping on them. I do think probably the skittishness, and I will say I've had three. The one I have now is probably the least skittish of the three. She hasn't been as, or he or she, hasn't been as bad as a hair kicker. She hasn't been kicking that much at all since I put her in this new enclosure. But when I disturb the enclosure, she does kind of run around the enclosure a little bit, gets a little bit crazy, but nothing that bad yet. But I have heard from other people that have reported again that theirs can be quite rambunctious when they're disturbed, between the running around, bolting around the enclosure, kicking hairs all over the place. Again, those two males were bald as can be before they finally pass. So that's something to keep in mind. So this isn't necessarily one of the spiders I would put on a beginner species list. They can be quite fast, skittish, the hairs, but they are beautiful spiders and ones that I think more people should check out. Now, as far as eating and feeding are concerned, they were great eaters early on. They continue to be great eaters. I've had no issues there. Just like the other ones, when they were babies, I gave them little Red Runner roaches. As they got a little bit bigger, we switched to larger roaches or smaller crickets. And then once they hit around 3 inches or so, they have no problem taking down larger prey items. Excellent hunters. And then once again, use whatever prey items you want. Just know that they are, if they're arboreal ones and you're dropping in mealworms on the bottom, you might have to do the old tong thing or drop the mealworm in front of them so it finds them before the mealworm buries itself. Or you can just crush their head so they won't bury themselves. But I have found that the mealworm sometimes won't do a lot of wiggling after you crush their heads. Now, as the male I had hit 7 inches, I'm assuming females can get even larger than that. I have heard from a couple folks, they have ones that have reached almost 8 inches, which would make it a rather large spider. So picture it. 8 inches, that green-blue body, that bright pink butt. Talk about a striking spider. Yep, a little crazy, but if you give him enough room to hide and it's set up in a proper enclosure that gives him some coverage, I'm sure it'll be just fine. I will say that if this one is a female and does hit the 8-inch mark, it will definitely be getting a much larger enclosure. I would then go to one of the ExoTerra, the 12 by 12 by, what is it, 16 or 18 inch tall ones. We put it in one of those, and I think that would be a much better enclosure for it. Probably some real plants, some multiple hides, but I would definitely love to have this one as a showcase spider. So fingers crossed this one's a lady. Fingers crossed it gets as big as I hope they can. Oh, as far as growth rate, this one grew a little more slowly than some of my other ones. Actually, all three of them grew a little more slowly. I have spoken to other people that have had a little better luck with the growth rate, but it could be because they're keeping it warmer. Again, warmer temperatures lead to faster metabolism, lead to faster growth rate. But mine have all grown at a more medium pace. So again, faster than those most of those beginner species, the slow-growing beginner species, but not quite as fast as the other two species we mentioned on this list. So Thrixopelma ocrati, is it for beginners? Probably not. Is it a great spider for somebody with some experience? Yes, I think they're great looking, awesome spiders, really just unique looking and unique spiders. So again, I hope more people check them out. It seems like a lot more often lately, I've been getting emails and messages from people who have been like, hey, guess what I just picked up? A Thrixopelma ocrati, I love this thing. So I love hearing that because I've been trying to spread the word on them for quite some time. And it's nice when a spider that you have an affinity for gets picked up by kind of the masses and other people start realizing what a cool animal it is. So there we go. That is the three Thrixopelma species I currently keep. The Thrixopelma cyaneolium or Lunga coli. I think it's a cyaneolium, but still some confusion there. Thrixopelma pruriens and the Thrixopelma ocrati. All awesome spiders. I was just looking, doing a search on some other Thrixopelma species. I know other folks are Thrixopelma enthusiasts and have told me some other ones I should check out. And this is definitely a genus of tarantulas that I am considering collecting. A lot of times if I get more than one of a certain genus, I kind of become interested in them. And I'm like, well, I want to do more. I want to see what the other ones are like. And I love being able to do, obviously, those genus reviews. So this isn't really a full genus review because there's only three spiders on it. But there are three spiders of the same genus, which is pretty cool. So in the future, I will probably keep a lookout for more species. If folks have recommendations of which ones I should look at, please let me know. I will definitely keep my eyes open and try to expand my Thrixopelma collection. Because again, they're awesome spiders. And once again, for folks who are just getting into the hobby and looking to get their first slings, definitely give the cyaneolium, Lunga coli, and the prurians a look. I don't think you'll be disappointed. I think you'll be very pleased with what they bring to the table in terms of ease of care and just looking like darn cool spiders when they grow up. So that will do it for this one. A little shorter episode today. Actually, in my defense, I always used to shoot for the 40-minute mark or so. A lot of these have been a lot longer lately, so anytime it goes over 40 minutes, you're getting a bonus. But we just got a Christmas tree today, and I promised the kids we'd go down, throw on a Christmas story, and decorate, so I didn't want to spend too much time locked up in the tarantula room doing the podcast. As far as videos concerned, the only thing I've posted up on YouTube, it's been a long week as far as like having work to do and things to do, so I didn't get to put up a full husbandry video or rehousing video, but I did put up some footage of my Heteropoda Maxima, quote unquote Maxima, the Thai cave spider or whatever folks are calling them now. They're getting, one of them is quite big, looks like she's pushing about 6 inches or so. The other one's slightly smaller, looks to be a molt or a behind it. So for folks that were asking about that species, that's up very quick. It's just one of those little YouTube shorts. I also put up something on YouTube telling folks that if there's something you want to see an update of, just want a quick little update, like what are they looking at? Like, what are they doing? How big are they? How are they? I can do those through YouTube shorts. It's a nice use of that medium, I think, as far as just being able to go, look, here it is. Because sometimes in the past, when somebody's asked me to do an update on a certain species, I have to wait until a rehousing so I can actually get footage of it. But if I can catch a little bit of footage, you know, 50 seconds of footage of these guys out and about and just be able to talk about how they're doing, I can do that. So that'll do it for this one. As always, find me on YouTube, find me on thomasbigspires.com, find me on Thomas Big Spires Podcast. Guys, stay safe, have a good one, and we'll catch you all next time.